Welcome to the Wanting It More podcast. I am your host, Jana Dentonhouse, and it's an absolute delight to have you here. I'm a marriage and intimacy educator, as well as a creator of the Wanting It More program, which has helped thousands of women who are married to men want and enjoy it more in the bedroom. You know, having low desire was something that I personally struggled with for years in my marriage, so I absolutely get it all. You are not alone. Just a heads up, I use all the words in this podcast, so if you've got little ears around or you're in public setting, you may want to pop in some earbuds. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the Wanting It More podcast. I haven't recorded a podcast episode in a couple of months. I mean, no one knows this, but we had batched quite a few before we started the current round of the program. So if I'm a little rusty, that's what's happening. But thankfully, we have a guest today so that I do not have to run the show by myself. Lisa is joining us. And we were exchanging an email. We've known each other for a while, and she was talking about a medical condition that she's recently been working through. And I thought, this is a great topic for the podcast because how many women have issues with their vulvas or vaginas or sensitive parts and need to get medical help and feel really awkward and uncomfortable and put it off and do all the late night Googling and freak ourselves out. So I thought it'd be a really good topic to discuss. I've also had my own sort of medical challenges. I have a bladder pain condition that is something that I have to manage, not something you can really heal. So maybe that'll come up as well. But we both sort of share that medical intervention aspect. So before we get into that, Lisa, do you want to just share a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi, listeners. This is Lisa. I've known Jana for a number of years now. I met her through the WIM program. I had to catch myself there. Feel free to edit this portion out or leave it in. That's life, isn't it? That you forget names of things real quickly. But yeah, I live in the United States, so that side of the world. I have a four-year-old and I work in technology, so I work from home. And I have known my husband for 10 years now.
All right, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
How did you discover it? What was the progression like? That sort of stuff.
Absolutely. So I'll jump right to it. I was diagnosed with lichen sclerosis. I know there's probably a listener going, don't leave me on the whole time. Tell me what it is. So it's this condition called lichen sclerosis, which I was not familiar with at the time. And how it came about was, and I think I've probably had it for a while, but I didn't really recognize the symptoms. Like occasionally I would have itchiness on my skin on the outside of the vulva. And I don't know, I just thought like, I don't know, my skin's dry, or like, I never put a lot of thought into it other than figuring this is normal. And, you know, little things like that. And then it was in December when it was just very itchy, like uncomfortable all day long. But there weren't any signs of a yeast infection. There wasn't anything that I thought like, oh, there's different changes in the discharge. There's nothing like that. I haven't had any changes. You know, as soon as you go to the doctor, they always are, have you changed any of your soaps recently? You know? And, you know, you're preparing yourself to go in. And one day I admittedly did itch because, you know, we're human. When you have an itch, you want to itch it, even though, you know, you're not supposed to actually itch things that are itching. It makes it worse. So that act of itching and that brief relief of itching made one side of my labia swell so much so that I reached out to, I have a group of girlfriends from college. We all still stay in touch, even though we're all very different points of our life. I'm like, has anyone ever had a really swollen labia? Like, and did you go talk to somebody about it? You know, because you're thinking, I don't know, is this, you have no benchmark. Oh. No one ever talks about it. I mean, I knew it was very clearly one side was inflamed. And I was like, this is very uncomfortable. This seems like an abnormal reaction.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny that if I had been itching my hand and one hand got really swollen, I wouldn't have to go ask a group of people if I should probably go see a medical provider to look at it. you know, I would be like, look, quick, let's jump in the car, you know, and this was, I don't know, is it normal? Should I go? Should I not go? You know, how quickly can I get in to be seen? And leading up to, before I took your course, we will say that I didn't have a lot of comfort with my own body. I mean, heaven forbid I would have used the word vulva or vagina. I think you made us all say that at one point, or, you know, and sex. And it was like, you know, I was probably red in the face and, you know, it was very uncomfortable. You know, I didn't spend a lot of time looking at myself and accepting it. I used to always feel going to a gynecologist so stressed out, but not about the just the uncomfortable nature. I mean, we all know they could improve the speculum. That's
seriously
just, yeah, that could be improved upon. The stirrups, not comfortable. But on top of that, I was always having these anxieties of, what are they going to think of how I look? Should I be trimming my hair? Should I be shaving my hair? Should you be washing beforehand? Should I put on fresh underwear? What if there's a little bit of discharge when I'm there? You know, what if this, what if that? And feeling so self-conscious about the way my body looked that I could hardly even get to then the anxiety about the stirrups and the uncomfortable cold exam room, because I felt that uncomfortable with my body, of that part of my body, I should say, not the entire body. And it was so interesting that for this, those thoughts never crossed my mind. Like, I went in, I doubt I changed my underwear. Like, I just was like, oh, I did. I mean, I showered that day, you know, got a shower in the morning.
As one does. Yeah.
Right. You know, I look like a human, but not my morning self before a shower. And I walked right in and I thought, I'm here. I put my feet in those stirrups. It's uncomfortable. Your legs get a little shaky. Like, I don't know about you. My muscles don't quite.
It's very odd.
I'm like, can I do this right when you need to? Because it's like, it's uncomfortable. It's a weird workout.
And they have you scoot like right down to the edge of the, like, move closer to the edge.
And you think you're so close to the edge, and they're like, move some more. And you're like, scoot, 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 move some more. Scoot,
and the
scoot,
paper's right all now. Crinkly and you got butt sweat and it's just the whole thing.
And they give you that like little, the massive white cloth to cover. And you're like, how am I supposed to cover myself with this? Like, what is the point of this?
I know. And then you're like, do we make conversation? Like, do I ask them about their day? How does this work? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Tell me more about like, what, how's your life been? How's the other vulvas been today? You know, like, so there's all these thoughts. And I realized all of a sudden that I have now, over the past couple of years, really grown, that I went in and I was like, I have a problem with my vulva. And I said, you know, it's my right labia. It's down right near the vaginal opening, you know, and I had no qualms about using these words. And the provider, of course, didn't. I realized the provider, I had the same interaction with my provider that I would have had I had all that typical anxiety that I used to always have. And I thought, this person's going to deal with however my vulva looks today, or they're going to deal with the fact that my legs are not shaved. Like, they're a medical provider. That's the profession they went into. You know, like, we all have bodies. We all have hair. We all have smells and discharge. Like, it's normal. And I think the normalization that I have started to come across with my body through you, even through that first step of going into this process and that first appointment, was just so profound that I thought, I'm comfortable. I think I put that in my email. I was like, I'm comfortable. I mean, I'm not comfortable. No one's comfortable at a gynecology appointment, but I wasn't uncomfortable. I knew what I was talking about. I was confident why I was there. And it was amazing to me that there was a difference, that I had this whole life leading up to this point where it was not that experience. And that to me is baffling. And, you know, so now I try to talk about it with, you know, other women, just even using words more often, or talking about that I went there and I had this issue, because maybe if they have an issue at some point, they're not going to feel so self-conscious about it and just go see somebody, you know, work through it and figure it out.
Yeah. Did they bring out a mirror? Were you able to look
Well, so that was the interesting part. They did not for that one. Now I have to think about this. They, that first time they did not, they looked at it and they could see like, yes, there's, you know, a lot of redness that's inflamed, but they couldn't see. I mean, it was so inflamed that it was hard to like see different things. So of course they tested for a yeast infection.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was the other thing, you know, you go through that first set of questions, which I understand you have to ask, because someone might come in and genuinely say, I'm using a new soap. And it's like, well, that's probably why, you know. So we had to go through those questions, which, as you know, when you were going into your you know, your bladder pain issues and things like that leading up to it, you're so used to people dismissing your pain and the discomfort that just even hearing those questions, that is still hard to hear. Like, are you sure you didn't change your laundry detergent? And I'm like, yes. And then I'm second guessing myself and the doctor going, did I change my laundry detergent? Like, I don't think I did. But you start second guessing yourself because you have a lifetime of experience of people second guessing your pain and your symptoms.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting to me. And so they did that. And they said, just take the one, you know, one pill for that, because it's once and the yeast, if that is what it is, then, and they're like, and then we'll rule on to other things. And of course it wasn't that. There was no improvement. And then, you know, there was a topical ointment and there was no improvement because there was this, it also presented itself in a slightly different way than I think a lot of times lichen sclerosis does. So lichen sclerosis, let me talk about that here. Here we go. I'll go. We'll can I reference a legit website? Okay.
Oh, yeah, of course.
NHS.UK. So this, you know, pretty real good website here.
Yeah.
But they say lichen sclerosis is a skin condition that causes itchy white patches on the genitals, or it says apparently other parts of the body. There's no cure, but treatment can help relieve symptoms. Well, there's obviously more involved in this, and it can eventually cause, you know, then the National Institute of Health in the States, you know, is also talking about how they do categorize it as an autoimmune characterization. But here's the wild part about this. It turns out my aunt has this.
No.
When I told my mom goes, that's funny. I think your aunt has that. And I said, what? So then my aunt calls me and she's like, oh my gosh. But by the time my aunt found out, she had been, and there's a lot of women who have been dismissed over the years where doctors are saying it's a yeast infection, treated as a yeast infection, that eventually their labia atrophy. And then it's just, it all atrophies or confused together, or there can be a lot of tearing because the tissue gets so thin. And so there is a lot of women in these support groups that I've joined and things like that online that are at that end of it because earlier on they've been dismissed for so long. And so, you know, luckily mine was caught so early that, you know, we can treat it, hopefully get it into like remission, quote unquote, that, you know, we can stabilize and go from there. But I'm like, you know, that these women are like, I don't, that all of a sudden they wake up and they're looking and they're going, I don't even have any folds there anymore. And they're just shocked, trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, now at least it's becoming more known. There's still not a whole lot known about, you know, what causes it. People try different dietary things to help, you know, they found, you know, you lower your sugar intake, that can help, or alcohol, you know, these things. Or like, I had to then clear out my underwear drawer because the only underwear that's like comfortable is like cotton.
100%. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And like, I'll find if I'm having a lot of irritation, like I can't wear jeans for a few days. Like even now I'm in, you know, baggy pants because you need more airflow, I guess. But, you know, these things that just make it so uncomfortable that now you're thinking about that aspect of, you know, oh, we're traveling somewhere warm, that warmish that I would have normally worn jeans. Okay, what can I wear that I'm going to also be comfortable with? And this is, I'm telling this story in a disjointed way, but all good things to talk about. Another is, you know, so I still do an ointment and I needed a travel mirror. just like a little, do you know how hard that is to find, at least in the United States now? The only things they sell are these massive ones. And I'm like, I can't fly with that. I mean, I could, but it'd take up my whole luggage. And it was just like, I remember I was actually shopping. I was visiting my parents and my dad and I were running in the store. And it was a store where they didn't have what we needed. But I was like, Dad, I need this little mirror. And he's like, okay. And we waited in this very long line because it was close to the holidays to buy this little mirror. And I was like, I need it for my ointment. And he was like, all right, I'm like, whatever.
That's great. That's another thing. When you have a condition around your genitals or sensitive bits, whatever you want to call them, like talking about it with other people. How have you,
it's
I mean,
very,
it sounds like you have a pretty cool dad and pretty cool group of friends, but how have you found that? Like, are there times when it's flaring up and it's uncomfortable and it sort of limits your socialization, or like, are you able to share?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. We were on a family vacation, a big one, with like extended family, my immediate family, but you know, everyone has kids now, and this was a big group. And that was the clothing, and it was irritated. And you know what? I actually didn't bring it up on the trip that I was uncomfortable. And it's funny because I had spoken with a lot of my sister-in-laws knew, my parents knew. I honestly don't know if my brothers knew or not at that point. Like, I don't know. We were also focused on organizing this big trip. And I just thought it was so funny after the fact that I never said anything during. But then like after I sent like a text message about it to like one of my sister-in-laws, you know, it was just so funny that even then it's still a weird thing to bring up and go, oh, I might need, I don't know, whatever you might need to take care of yourself, that I need a couple extra moments to go do this thing real quick. And that I didn't bring it up is interesting. Though I will say the other flip side is when I have brought it up to people, I feel that then they have opened up and told me something about their, like another friend was going through something where they're trying to figure out if she has somehow hit menopause like 20 years earlier than you normally would. Or, like all of a sudden it's like, I say this one thing and it opens these doors for people to start talking. Or like another friend reached out and was bringing up sex conveniently about this and how, you know, the husband wants it, she doesn't, this thing. And I'm like, well, I have some info for you. But it's very interesting that by me taking the steps to talk about it, no one has shut it down. They might be like, okay,
yeah,
like
awkward.
Maybe a little, yeah. And like, they move on, but no one has, it's interesting that the only thing I've seen it really do, the only impact is that it seems to bring about more conversation.
Yeah, I see that when women bring up like incontinence, for example, that happened in a coaching call recently. And so many women were like nodding their head and saying like, thanks for bringing that up, because it's so common for women and nobody talks about it. And there's just a lot of logistical considerations, like what kind of liners do you use? Are you sensitive to them? Can you use period underwear for incontinence? How do you stay clean? Like, it's just, there's so many logistical things. I've also felt the same way. I thank goodness, with a great pelvic floor physiotherapist, I am in very little pain these days, but I went through about a year and a half of it being really bad. And I had so many similarities going to the doctor and just being dismissed. Oh, I have something called interstitial cystitis, IC. And my doctor's saying, oh no, that's definitely not IC. You're too young, or you're too that, or maybe lose a little weight. Just throw that in for good measure. And yeah, it's like, you know, I'm like, actually, I have all the symptoms. I have everything. And then it was my pelvic floor physiotherapist who, with a lot of care and attention, we discovered that the biggest trigger for me is when I'm drinking. So I cannot go anywhere near artificial sweeteners or carbonated drinks. Are the worst. Carbonated drinks landed me in the emergency room. It was that bad. Yeah. Because I was trying to stay away from sugar. And so I was drinking these like stevia carbonated drinks, thinking they were so healthy.
Right. Oh no.
So bad. And coffees or decaf tea I can't drink, but it just takes a lot of time, and it also takes finding other people who are willing to talk about their experiences and then also not freak you out. So how have you found that going on to online forums and stuff? Are you able to? It's such a balance, you know, of not scaring yourself about what it could be like, but then also getting good information.
Yeah, I have found that there are a couple groups that I did mute. You know, I'm still on them because I was like, I don't want to go through the hassle of joining again if I need to reach out. But it was almost more overwhelming when I started joining those groups than just being like, I'm going to listen to my doctors. You know, I'm going to read things that reputable medical places have posted. I'm going to talk with my aunt who has experienced it, and I'm going to focus on my things because there are so many symptoms that people are having with this to varying degrees. But then you're getting in this cycle of you're feeling guilty because yours isn't as advanced as somebody else's. Or then you're feeling stressed out because what if it turns into something else, you know? And like there's a very low percentage chance. I mean, that's probably the other thing that I got before I knew what it was. I did go down the Google rabbit hole, as one will do. And
all the
at
Google
that point,
images. Those are
oh
the
yeah. And I'm looking and I'm like, that's it. I am about to die. I have like stage 700 of cancer, of some type of rare cancer. And, you know, my son's going to be raised without his mother, you know. And you go down this thing, you know, and obviously I use like 700. I realize if someone's listening, that's not a real stage of cancer. It's like, that was the point. I was trying to be a little facetious there. But, you know, you do, you go down this and you have to, there's a fine line because you want to be educated, but you also don't have all of the correct information because there's so many nuances to absolutely everything in the world. So that's definitely a fine line. And, you know, then the convenient thing was then when they did the biopsy, I was so uncomfortable with it healing that like, I just forgot about all those fears. Cause I was like, come on, let's, you know, cause that's the other thing that I found funny is they were like, oh, it'll like heal, but they did a punch biopsy, right? I mean, it was truly right on the edge of the vagina. And I'm like, once it would start to heal, I would take one little step. There's a little bit of movement. It's going to reopen.
Yeah.
So that happened twice. And I was like, why did we not, like, why is there not, I mean, I don't know. I didn't even bother researching it. Once it healed, I was like, whew, made it through that hurdle. But, you know, it makes me wonder, should that have truly maybe been sutured and thought through like, hey, maybe just like one little suture, you know, it's unusual perhaps to do it, but right where anatomically that was, there's going to be a pull every time your legs move. Like that's just how the body works, you know? Again, I don't know. I didn't follow up with them. I wouldn't say it's like malpractice by any means, but it does make you wonder, why is that how it was handled? You know, and it does make me wonder, well, if they had taken a biopsy from a man in that same spot, would they have put a suture in?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
You know, like
we can guarantee that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody's listening going, oh, absolutely we would. You know, and it's stuff like that, that it's little things that you're still thinking, you know, there's no, maybe I have a low pain threshold, but there was no discussion about even pain medication.
What?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah. I took Tylenol.
Tylenol?
Mm-hmm.
A biopsy?
Mm-hmm.
They took a piece of flesh from your body?
Yeah.
Like one of the most sensitive parts of your body?
Yeah.
That's horrific.
Uh-huh. And then I was terrified to put any other type of pain relief. I mean, obviously it had to heal, but when I had given birth 4 years ago, I reacted. We still don't know what it was, but you know, they give you all that topical stuff to put on to help soothe. And I had this horrible reaction that like we had to go to like the emergency providers and they were looking at it and they're like, well, it's either herpes or a reaction to one of the topical things. And I was like, it was like whiplash. I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I don't. Like, I was like, how could I? And they're like, well, it's occasional. It'll happen that like you have it and you don't know. And then something traumatic like birth, and then it just like comes out. And I was like, what? And it was so strange. And, you know, I mean, you've just given birth. It was our first child. I'm like, what is happening? And it turned out it was not that, you know, and it ended up just being a skin thing. So then I used none of like all that stuff I threw out. And I was like, we're just going to do the little ice pads and water and just be miserable for a while, because now I'm too terrified to try anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I was so hesitant even trying the different ointments I had to do with this, where it was like, please, you know, no crazy reaction. But yeah, once again, you know, we're cycling in these things where you're also at that point that still baffles me. And I did talk to someone in that world that said, well, actually, like, I know that does sound crazy, but they really do. Those two reactions really do look the same, but I still feel like, man, they couldn't have, you know, worded it any differently.
Yeah. Maybe the delivery could have been right. A little bit improved.
Right. Like, so, hey,
so casually, well, it may be herpes.
Right.
Which you'll have for the rest of your life. And how did you get it? And
yeah. Yeah. And you're like, what? And like, oh, all of your hormones have just completely plummeted. So now's the time to just not be sensitive at all with how we're delivering information.
What was the time frame between your gynecologist saying, hey, try this stuff for yeast infection, and then getting your biopsy done?
You know, credit to this gynecologist, it was very fast.
Oh, good.
I mean, we're talking a matter of weeks.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, so this person, I loved this person. They weren't my regular provider. I just happened to walk in and that's who was available. I mean, I made an appointment, but that was who was available. And which I think is also very unusual to be able to go that quickly. And there's like this small little tiny, tiny growth that they wanted to biopsy, because they're like, it could be something called VIN, which has potential to actually turn into cancer, can be precancerous. So that's what they wanted to check for. It came back negative for that. And then the lab was like, well, this is like in sclerosis. Like what were, so like that
lab that
it wasn't even on the table with the provider. Actually, the lab was like, oh, there's no, whatever the other thing was, and no cancer, nothing abnormal, but the skin is indicative for lichen sclerosis.
Fascinating. Wow. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it takes in Canada here, probably where I live, probably about 3 months to see a gynecologist, something like that. Just
yeah, I managed. There was one open, like a, it was just like a women's health. I do live without giving away too much information, but I live somewhere where there's a lot of healthcare options, and I'm in a position that affords me to get in with healthcare options. But I do think that standard would be, if I wanted to see my own provider, I would have had to have waited at least 3 months.
Yeah. All the while your condition getting worse and you suffering and all the
right.
Anxiety and fear about what this is. And yeah. So how are things now? Are you managing it? Is it sort of depends
well,
on
that's
the day?
That's a very good question. About 3 weeks ago, I was like, I've got this. And then the goal was to decrease the dose ointment, go every other day. And that little spot is growing a little bit bigger. So I'm currently in a cycle of anxiety now, thinking, what if that biopsy didn't grab the exact spot? Like, what's the error of the margin of error? There we go. Around that spot, you know. So now in my mind, I'm hitting that cycle again. And you know, I have an appointment with my primary care like next week, I think. So you know, I have a list between that and you know, another one that's the body, but not the vulva, is now, you know, colon cancer is becoming a big thing in younger folks, I should say. In the, you
is
know,
it
typically
really? I didn't
yeah
know
so
that.
now that I'm going to strike fear in everybody, the listeners. But yeah.
How old so are you, Lisa?
yeah.
What are we doing?
I'm not 50. Yeah. Tell us more. But yeah, there, it used to be right that they would start screening, you know, for people who are over 50. I don't know if that's the exact age in every country. That would be an interesting point. But they're starting to see more cases in people in their 30s. And they don't research, they don't screen people at that age. And so when they are finding it, it's much farther along. That's much harder to heal from. And I suffer from IBS. So now we're diverging, but we're still talking about medicine and, you know, just going in with confidence that I think can go on. You know, if you're worried about the gynecology and your vulva, now all of a sudden I'm telling myself my butt is no different from my vulva. Like, it is still a part of my body. It is, you know, the things that, you know, I've practiced with you where you talk about your body in some way, you know, where I can say, without my intestines, I would not be able to get rid of the extra parts of the food that my body can't use. Like, I wouldn't be able to compost this material on out, you know, or however you want to
phrase
it.
Nice and neutral words. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that's helpful and interesting that, you know, we can then apply it to other areas or functions of the body that are also perfectly natural, that people get squeamish about, they don't want to talk about. Or again, just being prepared going in for dismissal of, well, it's probably just your IBS, this thing, and sticking up and going, you know what, no, I need, you know, let's talk about what, you know, what are the qualifying factors or what can we do for this or that? Or, you know, I'll be following up about the lichen sclerosis again, is going, okay, what are the next steps here? You know, if we're, oh, is it March? 10 weeks into using this ointment, and the goal was at 6 weeks to be able to successfully get down to a lower dose, and I can't do that. Is something else going on, or is it just how this is treated, you know, and maybe it's not the right combination yet of drugs? And so I think it ebbs and flows with that confidence level of, you know, going in and being comfortable, you know, on days that it, speaking of being comfortable, on days that, you know, it's more flared up. And if I have scheduled connection time with my husband, where we typically, I think by now, your listeners are used to referring to connection time or, you know, whatever verbiage they're used to
XD
hearing.
Is use.
They do. Okay. XD. Yeah, yeah. I was like, yeah. So XDs, you know, but I think that's the other thing is now we're at this part where I can say, you know, I'm too itchy tonight, like, or, you know, I'm really feeling uncomfortable, or low power mode. Sorry. Low power mode was to my phone for all of those listeners. If that stays in, was it my husband, me telling my husband on XD night, low power mode? Like,
that's awesome.
But, you know, being able to navigate that and, you know, also just being aware with my condition that sometimes it can cause a slight thinning of the tissue, that I am a little bit more aware and, you know, think, okay, do maybe I want to use a little bit of an extra lube to just add that protection proactively. You know, I don't know at what point would I hit that point of a symptom, but do I want to be a little proactive even if I'm comfortable right now without it? Do I want to do that? And having a spouse that's willing to openly discuss those things and be like, yeah, this is what we're going to talk about, and that we can still find moments of pleasure together. Like, it doesn't take away from the pleasure.
No.
Talking about the symptoms, because it's not like, you know,
being human together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like two human bodies with lots of feelings, emotions, physical stuff, disconnection. I mean, so much of us, you know, just human, not having to show up and perform. And
right.
And how is it, has it changed your relationship with your own body? I know some women struggle a bit with that, because especially when it's an unknown for a while, it's like, what's happening? You're so mysterious. Like, what's going on? How are you doing with that?
It did. That's a good question. I think especially at first, I was shocked that I had a diagnosis. So, you know, I definitely went through some times where a good friend and I, we lived many, many, many hours away, different time, very significant different time zones. So we leave voice messages to each other, like long 6, 10, 20 minute ones, rambles, and we listen and then reply. And, you know, there were many in that, you know, first couple weeks where, you know, I was just trying to grapple with it and feeling upset, feeling down, because all of a sudden my body was changing in a way that I never thought it could. But I was also so shocked that I actually had something, that then I didn't want it, you know, because you go again for so long. As I mentioned, you know, IBS is another thing that people dismiss all the time, right? Or headaches, you know, just things that it's like, well, if you don't have a brain tumor or, you know, you're not internally bleeding, you're probably fine. And so I'm so used to that type of feedback medically that I wasn't expecting any type of diagnosis at all. And then I had one and I was like, wait, like this is actually something I'm going to have to deal with now every day. And so, you know, I might sound positive as I'm talking about it now and have been. So it's a good thing you asked that question, is there are those days where you're down and, you know, now I'm spending lots of quality time with my nice mirror. My aunt, shout out to my aunt. She sent me a care package. It had this awesome mirror with this like magnetic attachable light to so you can like see, and like these little like squirt bottles to help. Like, she's like, sometimes this is soothing. And like, I mean, it was so cute. I just loved it. So women supporting women there. But I do spend a lot of time now looking to track changes. And that's weird and jarring to be frustrated that now I have to deal with this stupid, irritating thing that, yeah, you know,
where it should be like, or not should, but it was once an area solely for function and pleasure. And then now it's medical. There's like a medical relationship with it now.
Yeah. And it changes the way you act. I mean, as you know, with your bladder pain and you were sharing the carbonation, right? And all of a sudden now you're like, you know, you're like, I'm glad I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but on one hand, you're probably glad to be in less pain and now know it was the carbonation. But then you might also have days where you're like, oh, really, really loved it when I could go grab a quick can of soda and hear that little pop and have some little bubbles, you know? And so I think we have to allow ourselves to feel that sorrow for what we used to know. Who we used to be is probably the wrong word, because we're still the same person, but there are changes. But I do think it's important to allow yourself to feel those feelings, because it's, I mean, of course, it's different. It changed. You liked how things were. And giving yourself the grace to go through that and feel what you are about it. And maybe you did go to an appointment. You know, maybe when I go see my PCP, who I've oddly never met in person, who's the old one, retired, you know, whole thing, and then virtual. And, you know, am I going into that going to have some of my own old thoughts resurface of like, ooh, how am I looking down there today? What's she going to think? Is she going to think it looks bad enough? Is she going to think it looks good enough? You know, and like those thoughts will probably be there, but having the knowledge that I'm having those thoughts, I think, is the game changer, that then I can redirect as I need me and go, wait a minute, I don't have to think this way.
Yeah, I think having conditions that you can manage, but there's no cure, is a particularly hard pill to swallow. It's and even though, you know, you both, you and I have a treatment plan, we have some things that work, you know, I still have days where I wake up and I go pee and it burns. And that's a big part of the symptoms. I get it's very similar to having a yeast infection, but it's not a yeast infection. Everything's a yeast infection to start
I know,
out.
like it's a yeast
Yeah.
infection. No, it's
Also,
not.
when I eat gluten, I also get very itchy vagina as well. And so that's, I thought I had a yeast infection then, but no, it was a gluten intolerance. So, you know, it can, it's just like, it's like, oh, you know, today, like, and then you go through those slurry of thoughts. What was it? Was it something I wore? Was it something I ate? Is it, and it just, it kind of can consume your thoughts. And then you're thinking about the future. Well, I had a good couple of weeks and I thought we had this handled. And now what am I looking at? Years of, you know, it's just really complicated.
100. I'm like, you're in my brain right now, you know? And I think for so many listeners, it's the same where you know, it's hard. It's uncomfortable. It is still awkward. You know, when you bring it up to certain people, but just trying to move forward and talk about it, you know, hopefully there will be one listener, you know, even if one listener is listening to this, and it's going to give them the confidence to go to their gynecologist or their PC primary care provider. I don't know if that term is used and if PCP is used everywhere. So that's what I mean by that, your primary physician. You know, if it just helps one person to give them that boost of confidence to say,
don't back down, like just don't back down.
You got to advocate for yourself. And also, if you go and it's nothing, what if you've lost nothing? And also, they're being paid by insurance companies.
That's their job.
That is their literal job.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like if I, you know, anybody, if I think about any other job, you know, if I go to the library and I say, I'm looking for a book on how to raise an axolotl, like those cute little animals with the gills. Not the gills, I'm doing the movement, everyone. So if you go look up an axolotl, if you don't know what it is, I'm pretending I'm a, they're adorable. But, and then they'd be like, and then I'd show them a picture of my animal and they're like, actually, that's a lizard. Like, and I'd feel kind of dumb, but like, that's their job, just to help guide me. So like, maybe this is a terrible comparison,
no, it's
but
great.
It's
great.
It's the same.
It's neutral.
For if I go and they're like, that's actually not an issue. Like there's nothing concerning about this and you actually aren't having symptoms. Cause that could be another thing. Maybe you're concerned about an appearance of something and, but you don't have any other symptoms. That could also happen. You know, there's different glands that sometimes get swollen. And I think that's a big thing is just go. It's better to get it checked out, advocate for yourself and get the answers or non-answers, which can be incredibly frustrating.
So frustrating. Yeah. I had
but don't sit on the sideline.
I had like one pelvic floor physio do an internal. Then I had my physician do two internals. Then I had two internal ultrasounds, an external ultrasound. And every single one was, well, it looks normal. And there I am in so much pain as they're doing the ultrasounds. Oh, it looks normal. Everything's where it should be and no discoloration, no nothing. And I'm like, you know, I think what I had to remind myself is they're busy. They're stretched. I've got 5-10 minutes with them and they're not living my life. They're just not living the day-to-day in and out, the pain, the confusion. If it was nothing, it would be nothing to me.
Right.
It would just be nothing.
I love that.
And if it was anxiety that was causing some symptoms, you would go to an ultrasound, get an ultrasound and be like, okay, it's fine. And then it would go away because the anxiety would go away. But if the symptoms persist, then, and gosh, it took me, then I had to see another pelvic floor physiotherapist. And she ended up having the most experience on Vancouver Island of anyone with IC, and her mom has IC. So she was able to really give me, she's like, let's just proceed, assuming it is. And if we treat it as it is and your symptoms go down, then why the heck not? Like, why the heck not just proceed with this? So yeah, persist. I mean, in your situation, how long would it have been to get a diagnosis if they hadn't caught it at the lab? Like, it's just...
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of my story is complete luck, which I'm very grateful for, you know, and as someone who's had, I mean, everyone has medical issues that we all know have something that we've had where we're hearing those answers. And you said something that I was going to reply to.
Well, I'll just throw in while you're thinking about that, you know, like pelvic organ prolapse is another one that I think a lot of women have, and it can be really scary. So I just wanted to throw that in because that's a really common one with your vulva, like seeing stuff protruding out of your vagina can be really, really scary. And that's another one that I think women, they healthcare providers don't have enough answers for. They often will gaslight women, and but you know, sometimes surgery is necessary. Sometimes great pelvic floor physiotherapy can be wonderful. Sometimes you can, there's different devices you can use. I just, yeah, gosh, if we could all just get in a big room and talk about all the issues that we all face, we'll realize, oh, we're not as abnormal as we think we are. And then we could get some actual support, which is why I love your aunt has been there for you. I mean, just incredible.
I think the normal is, I love that when you said that we're all abnormal. The normal is nobody, I mean, the chance that somebody doesn't have a health issue is so low.
Yeah.
And I do want to say, like, so we're talking about persist, that, you know, you've talked about all those providers you went to try. You know, yes, I did look out that that lab happened to, why was this lab even, why is lichen sclerosis even on their screening? Like, I have no idea. Thank you to the lab tech who, you know, decided to be like, hey, let's check this one. Because it wasn't like a set order or anything for it. But it's kind of like dating or making a friend or finding a good therapist is there are so many providers out there. And just because some of them, and it is exhausting, you know, as someone who's been through like so many, not on this particular case, and you who have with the bladder, but again, is keeping on because... Then you know, when you found that one provider whose mom had IC, and it's frustrating. And I don't know, you know, that's a bigger conversation about the healthcare system as a whole, but it is finding those people that are the people you need to connect with. And I love, I'm going to like remember this for sure after this conversation, is when you said, if it was anxiety, it would have gone away by me knowing the result, you know, was low.
It was like a negative on any of the big stuff. We're always scared about cancer, really. That's the,
right, exactly. The yeah, it's terrifying. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna, you know, I'm going out tomorrow, you know, it's in my whole body, you know. And but even hearing that everybody thinks that has those same fears is so relieving to be like, okay, all right, I'm not the only one who jumped about 25 steps too far.
Oh yeah. I know every time I find a little, I have very lumpy breasts, and every time I find another little lump or something. Oh yeah.
Spiral.
Yeah. It's like my funeral and what,
what should I write to my children? You know?
Yeah. And I, unfortunately with Google, you can basically link any symptom to cancer. Like it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Any symptom.
Like, absolutely.
My ear is itchy, cancer.
My nose is running, cancer.
Well, on that lovely note, Lisa, we should probably wrap it up here. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I know it'll be a long road for both of us and figuring out our bodies. And as we go through menopause, I'm sure our bodies will do other fun stuff too. And
surprise.
but I'm sure that we've helped some other women feel not alone, more normal, maybe a little bit less fearful about going in and advocating for themselves and using all the words and the descriptions and please do, you know, when you're going into your healthcare provider, tell them exactly how it feels, exactly where it hurts, exactly your symptoms. And even if it's embarrassing, like the way mine started was during penetrative sex. Like that's how it all, so I had to, and I had an orgasm and I tightened my muscles. Like I had to explain the real nitty gritty details every single time of how it happened. So I totally commiserate if you are experiencing something similar. So if I can say orgasm in a medical setting, I'm sure you can say like itching and burning. So. All right. That's it. Did you want to end with anything or did you get to say everything you were hoping to?
Okay, well, and I will say one thing I did think as you're rounding up for any of the male listeners, just continuing to educate yourself and not run away from these topics when your spouse, your daughter, your sister, your anybody is don't run away from that conversation. Lean in.
Yeah. Ask some questions, be curious and use the, like correct terminology. That's just helpful just to keep it neutral. So
absolutely.
Thank you everyone for listening right to the end. I hope this was helpful. And I know it was, I mean, for me personally, I just love chatting with Lisa. So there's that. All right. Take care. And we'll talk to you in the next one. Bye for now.
If you've enjoyed this episode, I have a favor to ask of you. It's really hard to get the word out about a podcast about sex. What would really, really help is if you would leave a rating and a review. And I know that you get asked this all the time in different podcasts, but please, I beg you, it would really, really help so that more women who need this message will hear it. All you have to do is go into your Apple Podcast app. It's the purple icon. And if you go to the podcast page where it shows my face, and has a little button that says latest episodes. If you scroll down past the episodes and you get to a section called ratings and reviews, there's a little purple writing thing that says write a review. If you click on that, it will ask you to give it a 5 stars. Actually, you can put any stars, but 5 is what I would love. And put a title and then write your review. Thank you so much for supporting this little venture here, and I really am so grateful. If you are curious about wanting it more and how this program could help you want and enjoy sex more with your husband, and you feel like it may be a great next step for you, you can go to janadentonhouse.com/wantingitmore to sign up for the wait list, to learn more, to see when we're running our next round. All right, that's it. I'll see you next one.